This is a Christian Science extemporaneous prayer treatment. The website is mbeinstitute.org. There are various buttons at the bottom of every page which enable one to find out information about the Institute and the website. There is also a very extensive menu in the top left corner of every page, and the header, which is the top section of every page, includes a variety of links to some of the most popular pages on the website. The topic of this extemporaneous prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute is ability, appearance, and function. A good place to start on any prayer treatment are the three quotes at the beginning of the textbook, which is entitled Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy. The three quotes are as follows. 1. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Jesus. 2. There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. 3. Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. That is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere. Mary Baker G. Eddy. G represents one of her names, Glover, and she dropped that to make her name shorter. The first one is self-explanatory if we understand what truth is. Truth represents anything that is true about God, which includes what is true about His image and likeness, which is man. The second one says that our thinking is going to have a direct influence on our experience. And the third one says, if we dig for the truth, understand it, and if we feed into consciousness the things that are godlike, then we will be blessed, because we will be living in accordance with the laws of God. And the laws of God are not only omnipresent, but they express the omni-intelligence, omni-wisdom, and omni-knowing of God, and they are also omnipotent, and they are omni-active, which means that there is no premature action or delayed action or blockage to any action, and all action is good action, perfect action. All of these terms just discussed are in the definition of good on page 587 of the textbook, Science and Health, that was referred to previously. It's actually in the glossary, which is part of the Key to the Scriptures, which begins on page 500. 500 is the beginning of the Key to the Scriptures, and it includes chapter 15, which is on the spiritual interpretation of the book of Genesis. Chapter 16 is the Apocalypse. So the Genesis is the beginning, and the Apocalypse is the end. And number 17 is the glossary, which includes the spiritual translation of the keywords utilized in the Bible in Science and Health. And chapter 18 is the fruitage chapter, which is a record of 486 healings by 85 different people. So each one averaged about 5.7 healings per individual. And they have all been documented and verified. And these healings came about just from the deep study of the textbook. And there's 100 pages in just the healings. So that covers the 700 pages of the textbook. And the first 13 chapters give you the details on Christian Science and the system of divine metaphysics. And chapter 14 is recapitulation, which is a summary of chapters 1 through 13 in question and answer format, 24 questions in all. If one studies the proper way to read a book, they will find that it is very important to find out the structure of the book. And that's why this was just elaborated on in the last few words. Any quotations that are at the beginning of a book and any quotations that are at the beginning of any chapter within a book are extremely important to understand, for that tells you basically the theme of that particular chapter, or in the ones in front of the book, the theme of the entire book. We recommend that you read those three quotes at the beginning of the textbook anytime you are going to read anything out of the textbook, and anything you're going to read out of a particular chapter, to read the introductory quotes for that particular chapter. And of course, this textbook is structured so well that it has every topic that is the key of that particular text in the chapter. It has a title so that you can understand what your focus needs to be and what your keywords that you should be looking for are tied to, because the topic is the key of the whole thing. Something else one should be aware of, and that is that the human system of remembering is very poor. And except for a very small percentage of the people who have experienced a photographic memory, the rest of us, and I'm included, as the rest of us, need to utilize all the senses possible when we are striving to learn something. That means not only our vision, but also our hearing, our feeling, tasting, and smelling. We have a feeling about things, and we must have the feeling that we understand something. Hearing is understanding, and it's spiritual understanding. And seeing is discernment. And of course, we want to have spiritual discernment so we can tell the difference between truth and error, which links into the first quote in the textbook. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. One of the most sure ways of remembering something is to record the text in your own voice, contemplate it, think about what it really means, and then put it in your own words and record your best estimate of what it means to you. And then you listen to it. So you're utilizing your voice and your listening skills and your mental capacity by thinking about what it means to you. And when you get an appreciation for all of these things, then you're going to get a feeling of whether you really understand it or not. And you're also going to get a taste. Is this something that I can accept? Is this something that seems to be true and accurate? Have I done enough questioning so that I'm convinced that I am reading something that is true? And even smell. It's like, are you smelling a rose? Are you smelling something that seems to be very beautiful to you? Does it line up with what you think is going to be an excellent dimension above what you've imagined before? So all five of the senses come into play. And if you miss any of them and don't utilize them, then you are missing out on something that is an important talent that you have available. And therefore, your results will be less effective. A lot of people resist recording. They say, well, I don't want to hear my own voice. Well, you're the one that needs to understand, not someone else. And just listening to someone else's voice, it doesn't matter who it is not the same effect at understanding it and remembering it as if you are the one involved doing it. We have a button at the top of every page in the header that is labeled Heal Everything. And if you click on that, we give you a complete procedure, which of course includes what's already been said, as well as other things. One other thing that's extremely important if you want to really progress in your spiritual understanding is to realize that love is a key element in anything you do if you want to progress spiritually. Love means giving. Most people do not give anything. They take. They are worried about not having enough. They're worried about not having enough time, not having enough money, not having enough resources, not having enough reasoning or intelligence or wisdom. You name it. And people will come up with something that they think that they lack that is an important thing that is holding them back from getting into a new level of progress within their own individual experience. If you study Christian Science, which is otherwise called the System of Divine Metaphysics, you can get rid of all of those problems, all of those fears, and you will move forward with confidence. Because you will see results when you study. If you enjoy playing sports or being involved in the arts, maybe you like piano and you are learning piano and you're advancing more and more, you know that if you want to improve your talents, you need to practice and you need to take lessons continuously. Learning how to learn is the same thing. You need to get information and advice from the experts, and with the internet, there is so much that's available on a gratis basis. And you need to practice what you learn. If you're not particularly an expert and proficient in reading, you should follow various resources that are available that give you clues on how to improve your reading skills. If you have trouble having enough time to get things done, you should follow up on being more proficient in time management. If you have a hard time getting a particular project done, you should study goal management, G-O-A-L. One of the most proficient Christian Science healers was named Bicknell Young. And people used to go to him and wanting him to do miracles on their business. And he sent most of them away because they didn't know their business. In other words, you need to know what you're doing. If you're reading, you need to know how to read with proficiency. No matter what it is, if you enjoy playing tennis, you should take tennis lessons. Become more and more proficient. If you're not interested in making a perfection out of every activity that you are involved in, then you should not be involved in the activity. Mary Baker Eddy said, Jesus became divine because he practiced the finer points of humanity, which is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. He was an expert on love. He was attacked all the time, and yet he continued loving. He wasn't concerned whether anybody loved him back. He was in the business of giving love. It was up to them to work out their own salvation. He may heal somebody, but he's not going to hold their hand for the rest of their life. Everyone needs to recognize the value of healing and therefore take up the serious study of Christian Science on their own. Mary Baker Eddy gives us a very big heads up on page 146 and 330. This is what she says. On page 146, she says, Divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. The system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based, and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. And on page 330 she says this, "When the 32 planks of the platform is understood, and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated." And from 330 to 340 are the 32 planks detailed in text. So she does not mess around. She says there's 32 primary topics that you need to learn and understand if you want to have success in healing. And she says you have to both demonstrate the letter and the spirit. The letter is the text. You have to understand the text. But the spirit is the qualities of God need to be exercised. In other words, you need to understand that mind includes omnipotence, omniscience, which includes omni-intelligence, omni-wisdom, and omni-knowing, and that mind is omnipresent and omni-action. All action is from mind. Spirit is substance. That means that it is flawless. Matter is full of flaws, but spirit is the opposite. It is pure and flawless. In fact, it's so flawless it is transparent, and therefore it's reflective. And soul is the way we identify everything, which is through seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling. And I've already explained basically what those mean in spiritual terms. The next one is principle. Principle is structure and system, always in balance and always harmonious. Life is living the qualities of God. Truth is staying on track on the path of truth, which is infinite progression, working toward concrete being. It is our motive, and it's our thought, speech, and actions as an engine which bring forth how we speak, think, and act. And if we have pure motive, then we will be thinking, speaking, and acting in a pure manner. Now, I don't mean we need to be speaking to other people. We should be mainly speaking to our own consciousness. And the last is love. Love means both the female and the male qualities, the qualities of strength and courage and perseverance, which are normally attributed to a male, and the qualities of love, which are expressed in kindness and tenderness, caring, nurturing. Those are normally qualities attributed to a mother. So both the motherly and fatherly characters are required in order to have the completeness of love. So that is the spirit we're talking about, the seven things that were just described. So we need to have an understanding of those, and we need to live those qualities all the time. The Bible says we should pray without ceasing. The only way we can do that I can think of is by living the qualities. And if we live the qualities, then we are living what Mary Baker Eddy describes that is needed in the 32 planks, the letter and the spirit. We cannot fail if we are systematic in what we do and if we're scientific. Einstein said, "Blessed art thou, because everything that is in this book." What book is he referring to? Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy. Blessed art thou. Who is he referring to? Mary Baker Eddy. He studied Christian Science intently. His friend, Dr. Underwood, was on the Atomic Energy Commission around World War II, and everyone on that commission passed on from radiation from their work, except for his friend Dr. Underwood. And he inquired of him, he said, "How did you survive? Everyone else is gone." He said, "I'm a student of Christian Science. I follow the writings of Mary Baker Eddy. I was healed through Christian Science." Einstein took an extremely serious interest when he discovered this about his friend. He visited churches wherever he was. He visited reading rooms. We believe he did a long way toward living his life as a Christian Scientist. Claire Barton said basically the same thing about Mary Baker Eddy and Christian Science. Her comments are on our website. Einstein's comments are on our website. They're both listed as authors, and there's quite a bit of material about them and their thinking and what they said and did about Mary Baker Eddy and Christian Science. We have the opportunity. Are we going to take it? Now, what is this title all about? Ability, appearance, and function. What it means is that it doesn't matter what seems to be a problem with you, whether it's an ability, whether it's the way you look, or way something functions within you, or the way you function as a whole. This covers the whole gamut of an individual. Ability, appearance, and function. That's the whole enchilada. It doesn't matter what the problem is. An expert Christian Scientist by the name of Frederick L. Rosen wrote a book entitled Treatment or Healing by True Prayer. In it, he provides the definition of 1,315 different problems as described by the medical profession and psychologists and psychiatrists and so forth. They all have some reason that they think is the cause of a particular disease. They describe it. He did the research to find out what they said about each one of these 1,315 different problems. And he put it in a very few words, like a sentence or two. And then he devotes like an entire paragraph on the thoughts that you need to utilize to reverse the medical definition of the problem. Very valuable resource. You should not read it from beginning to end, because then all you do is you embed 1,315 different problems in your thought. And the idea is to have your thought pure. So you don't want to let anything that describes an evil in your thought. You only want to read it so you see what the problem is. And then you say, that is not true about me. That's not true about man. That's not true in the whole world of vocabulary. In fact, Frederick L. Rosen recommends to make a very simple statement such as, there is no, and then you put the name of the problem. And then you forget about it. And you spend the rest of the time thinking about the opposite to what is stated as the problem. And he gives you the text that is the exact opposite that he researched on all 1,315 items in the textbook that he wrote. Treatment or Healing by True Prayer. And the title to the chapter that he explains all these 1,315 items is called Applied Treatment. In the first part of the book, he describes what he recommends as one way that you should approach how to have a prayer treatment. And then he has the chapter that explains all the problems and the solutions that go with those problems. And then after that, he gives you what his spiritual inspiration through his own prayer treatment on himself has revealed to him as what the quality is, the real spiritual quality that represents each symbol, main symbol of your body, that where it could, you know, have a problem. And he says, well, the real function of this part of your body is this. And he describes it in a few words. Very important. I don't know how many pages it is, but I think maybe around 10 or so. Very important. That you should read from beginning to end, because that does not describe diseases, but that describes the spiritual function of the various parts of your body. A very expert Christian Scientist that I was friends with for 20 years or more said, everything is qualities. Qualities, qualities. Everything is qualities. She said that when I asked her how she went about a treatment, she said, when I get a phone call, I let them talk, but I don't really listen because I don't want it to go in my consciousness. I just get enough of it to understand what they think the problem is. And then when they hang up the call, she goes to work to clean out anything that is in her thought that is negative about the individual. And then she works on everything that is positive about God's man. Not just that individual, but God's man. So it doesn't matter whether it is an ability that seems to be lacking, or the appearance that is a problem, or whether it is something that is not functioning properly, either internally or externally. So she basically determines what it is, and she goes to work on declaring the truth, which has to do with that first quote at the beginning of the textbook, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Then she goes to work on it. I have had contact with families that had all kinds of problems. One of them had a child that had supposedly a learning disability. And they told me about a practitioner that they went to when the child was very young. I don't know, maybe 6 months or a year old. And they said the first thing what you want to do is you want to prove every claim that has been put on them to be a lie. And the way you do it is this. She said, the first thing you want to do is teach them how to read at a very young age. So like at 3 years old, they started teaching the child how to read. And by the time the child was, 6 or 7 years old, that child, they had bought a set of books of the classics for children. And it was, it was very comprehensive. And boy, that child loved to read those classics. I don't know how many there were, like 25 or 30 books. And they read them front to back, no problem. And then they were told that you should teach them some skill that they may enjoy, like music. They said, consider maybe giving her piano lessons. she was given a claim that she couldn't do any of this. Okay, that she could never learn to read, or she could never learn to do anything such as play a piano. And they said that she would have all kinds of problems with coordination. So what did they do? They taught her acrobatics. Man, she could do cartwheels. They taught her swimming. She swam like a fish. Everything that they claimed, they attacked it one at a time. And they kept giving her lessons and teaching her every single thing. In a matter of, they found an expert piano teacher, and she had a PhD in music, and she was one of the top people in her country. She came to America from another country, from Europe, and she was one of the top people in her country in music. In fact, she traveled around the world representing her country in music. And she came to America because she was going to be a professor at one of the universities. And they met her before she got to her final destination. And they convinced her to stay for until she taught her children, or she taught their daughter, how to play the piano proficiently. So she stayed for like 4 years, and she gave lessons every day to that child. I don't know, probably 3 hours a day of piano lessons. And by the time, the end of like 4 years, that child could play any hymn in the hymn book up to 3 flats and 3 sharps. In 4 years, from knowing nothing about piano. Bicycle. She loved to ride a bicycle. They taught her how to ride a bicycle. Man, she could ride it anytime, anywhere, under any kind of weather. She loved it. Ice skating, they taught her how to ice skate. She used to hop on the local bus. It was in a very good area, very good community and so forth. It didn't go through any slum areas or anything like that. It basically went from where they lived to the ice skating rink, and because there was a big shopping center there. And so she would take the bus because they thought that would be good experience to teach her independence. And so she would take the bus. She was way too young to drive. She would take the bus to the ice skating rink, and she'd spend the time that she wanted there, 2 or 3, 4 hours. And then she would call them, and one of them would pick her up and take her home. So she'd get her own skates, you know, she rented the skates, and she'd get her own skates, put them on, go ice skate for 3 or 4 hours, and then she'd go to the payphone and call her folks, one of them to pick her up, and so they'd pick her up. I mean, she led a totally normal life, and the appearance, there's a claim that they have a special appearance that is not one of beauty, and this was a girl. The actual structure of her face and head changed. It actually changed from having the features that were put on her as a claim to a normal structure. So everything was affected by them not accepting the claim that was put on her. And it affected everything about her. So they were very good practicing Christian Scientists, and they were very insistent whenever they hired anybody to teach her what they couldn't teach, that they had to teach her, they had to treat her like anyone else. I remember they told me about this, the piano teacher, and they said, do you want us to do any, it was a woman, she said, do you want me to do anything special? And they said, no, you treat her like anybody else. She says, okay, I'm an unlimited thinker, it's okay with me. And so that's exactly what they did. So they overcame the belief of a lack of ability, a belief of an undesirable appearance, and the belief of functionality. Everything. All three areas they had to work on. I know of another case where they had a child that was born without the proper bone structure. And they asked the parents, do you want to put this child in an institution? Because it's going to take a lot of very special care. Well, they were talking to the wrong person. Because she happened to be a Christian Science practitioner. The wife was. And the husband was involved in another profession. But, I mean, he was very receptive to Christian Science, but he wasn't the practitioner. And so, no, the wife was the practitioner. And she's, no, we will take care of it. And it took them several years. I think she said it was something like 10 years old before everything was normal. And by a total coincidence, I was traveling. My wife and I were traveling, and we were long way from our normal residence, you know, a couple thousand miles. And we went to this small church in this town up in the Northwest. And there was a fellow that got up and gave a testimony about what I just told you. And I'm looking at this guy, and he looks like a muscle man. He's got broad shoulders, handsome fella. And so after the meeting, it was a small group, I don't know, 20, 30 people. I went up to him and asked him, and I said, "Do you know?" And I gave him the mother's name. And he said, "Yeah." I said, "That's my mother." What a coincidence. I mean, we were traveling through, well, it was about 4,000 or 5,000 mile trip, round trip. And this one little town we stopped in, and it was her son. Could not believe the coincidence. And maybe it wasn't a coincidence at all. Could have been God's hand that was guiding us to stop there. And when I saw him, I thought, wow. I mean, this guy looks like a, you know, broad shoulders. And I mean, it looked like he was a Mr. America. Very muscular and so forth. And yeah, he was the one. And he had his own business, and he was doing heavy labor work in it. He was a landscape architect. And he took care of properties, substantial properties in the area. He had a crew of men, and he did the designing of laying out new landscapes for people. Yep. I mean, not that I doubted her, but to see him was just like putting icing on the cake. So everything is possible. As a matter of fact, that's how Frederick Rawson begins his treatment, by saying everything is possible with God. And as a matter of fact, he was so advanced in Christian Science that he figured out through prayer how to overcome the belief of time. And I think I mentioned that he was an expert in electrical engineer. And he lived in the UK. And people came to him from all over the world to solve their electrical problems in their company. You know, big companies that were involved in electrical consulting. And they would come across a problem once in a while, the various people around the world, and they couldn't solve it. And this guy had a reputation of being able to solve problems that were difficult that other people couldn't solve. And so they would come to him. And this was over 100 years ago. So, I mean, there wasn't much in the way of transportation. Certainly there weren't any airplane flights, commercial airplane flights that you could get on and be there in, you know, short order. I mean, even the Concorde has been out since, geez, I don't know, 50 years. It was in the 1970s the Concorde came out, and it flew at Mach 2, which is like 1,600 miles an hour. So with that, you could fly from, you know, from the U.S. to Europe and, I don't know what it was. I think it was like 3 hours or something. And so, I mean, back in those days, it could take a month to get to where this guy's office was in the UK and a month to get home. They may only be there 2 or 3 days for him to solve the problem. It'd take 2 months for the transportation. But yeah, he attracted people from all over the world because he could solve it. But now there's an example. He was like Christ Jesus. He excelled in everything he did. Everything. He brought it to perfection. He was an expert horseman, and he played polo. I mean, that's a difficult sport. I mean, you're dealing with a horse. You're dealing with this thing on the ground that you don't want to hit the horse's legs with and whatever. And, he was a polo expert, and he was a rifleman. He went to a rifle shooting contest, and he said, I'm going to see if I can demonstrate perfection. So he had a rifle that he had never had in his hands before. He didn't explain how that happened, but anyway, that's what happened. And you would normally never do that when you go to a match. It's like taking a brand new tennis racket or anything, you know, something you're not used to. And so it was a rifle that he had never had in his hands before. And so he decided he would look away from the target, hold the rifle up there, and then look away from the target and close his eyes. And he would get his thought as close to God as he could do. He felt, I have to feel I'm in alignment with the truth about who God is and about who I am. And when I felt that line up, it was like a bunch of gears that were clicking, and all of a sudden they all get in alignment. And like you have a lubricant where everything was so well aligned, it was silent. You couldn't hear the clacking of iron or steel. And he said, when I felt that oneness with God, still with my eyes closed and my head away from the target, I pulled the trigger. I didn't even know for sure where the rifle was pointing, and I wasn't thinking about that. I was only thinking about keeping my thought totally aligned with truth, knowing that everything in God's universe is perfect. Nothing is out of alignment. And it was a bullseye. And that's the bullseye he won the contest. And he had two or three of his students that went to the same match. And they all did the same thing. They all said, I'm going to see if I can demonstrate this in what I've learned from Mr. Rawson. And they all got bullseyes. He's the one that won, so I guess he got more bullseyes than they did. But the point is that it wasn't just a single individual that proved it to himself. It was everyone that approached it in a similar way, getting their self out of the way, getting the thought about having competition or opposition out of the way. And they had one way to do, and that was to line up with perfection in their own consciousness. There was a high school football coach. There was a high school girls running coach. She wasn't coaching men's football. She was coaching women running, 400 meter yard run. And they had ended there before she was hired in the new school year. The prior year, they ended the last one of everyone in the whole league. I guess they didn't win any games, and they were the bottom rank. So they hired this person because I guess they were inspired to hire her. I don't recall offhand what the particular reason was why they hired her, but they were certainly worried about having another season coming in last. So they were very critical of everything she did. And everything she did was very unique. For example, she said, the first thing you want to learn is that you do not pay attention to anyone else on the track, period. No one. You have one goal, and that is to run your race, not someone else's race. You're not competing with anyone. The only thing you're competing with is your own thought, aligning it with the correct way to run this race. This is not a 100-yard dash. This is not a mile run. This is not a marathon, 26 miles. This is the 400 meter race, and I'm going to teach you how to run it and run it perfectly. She said, don't even care if you win or lose a game. A game, they're not a game, they're, you know, a track meet. She said, don't even think about whether you win or lose. She says, your only measurement is you running it according to the way I instruct you to do it. So she started out real slow because she knew that she had to build up their endurance. That was the key thing that was missing. They were missing everything, but I mean, she had to start with their endurance. So she started them out slow, and she said, I want you to run this in however many seconds it was. And if they came in too fast or too slow, she sent them out again. You know, they'd come like they were out of breath at the end, and she'd say, do it again. She'd get them off. Do it again right now. No, don't rest up. Do it again right now. And if they didn't come in within a very narrow margin deviation from what she had specified, she would keep sending them out to run another 400 yards, 400 meters. So when they perfected that pace, then she would take it up a notch. So it'd be a little bit faster. And a little bit faster, and a little bit faster. And finally, it got to the point where she felt comfortable that they had the endurance and that they were going to run the pace the same throughout the entire 400 meters. They weren't going to start off slow and then try to have a burst of speed at the end, or start out fast and try to keep ahead of everyone else. No, they were supposed to get the feel of it. How did it taste? How did it seem? Because you can sense. I used to run in track. You know, that's why I know a little bit about this. And you can sense how you're running. You know, how fast you're running. What your time should be when you finish. And so they established that feel. And she taught them so that the feel was what she wanted them to do as they progressed. Each level. Well, believe it or not, they ended up at the state championships. So they were at the state championships, and they were going to run against the best of the best throughout the state. So she had this pep talk with them at the beginning, which was really a discipline talk. And she said, now you've got one thing to think about, running your race at the pace that I've trained you to do it. You did the work, but I guided you on what to do. And you've got to do the very same thing today. Don't go 1 second faster or 1 second slower. I want you to be right on the mark. So that if I was down here with a stopwatch, you better be right on the mark. And you know how it should feel when you do it. That's the way she talked to them before they got in the starting blocks. And when they got in the starting blocks and took off, she walked on the other side of the track. So they didn't think about her or look for her or anything else as they were going around the track, because she didn't want to be a distraction to them. So when the race was over, they looked for the teacher, the coach. She was nowhere to be found. Nowhere to be found. She made sure that they started the way they were supposed to start. And she looked at them from a distance. And she could see that they were constant in their pace. So she didn't give it another thought. So when the race was over, they looked for her, and she was nowhere to be found. She had left the whole area because she had done her job. She didn't want to get congratulated. No matter where they came in, she didn't want to take any credit for it. She had learned a life of giving, which is one of the absolute required qualities if you want to be able to heal. If you want to heal anything, you have to be giving. You can't be taking. Taking is the opposite of love. Giving is love. You have to give up your sense of limitation about yourself. Period. Total. You have to give up the ego. Totally. Give up the sense of material life, truth, and intelligence in matter. Mortal mind. Anything at all that is other than spirit and God. That's the only thing that has life, truth, and intelligence. It's in spirit, not in matter. Not in mortal mind, but divine mind. Not in a material sense of seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling, but a spiritual sense. Not in a material life of sensation and sensualism and so forth. No, a life of spirituality. A truth based on true motives. And love that is spiritual love. So they looked around and they couldn't find her. They'd won. They'd won the championship, the state championship. And they wanted to celebrate. She didn't want them to celebrate. She wanted them to accept it as a natural result of them having the discipline to understand the principle of running and the principle of not thinking about other people in terms of competition or opposition, because that's taking. That's not giving. Giving is means you are looking at everyone at being the same idea of God that you are. We are all the image and likeness of God. All you have to do is read Genesis chapter 1, starting with verse 26 to the end, which is verse 31. You read those 5 or 6 verses, and that tells you what man is. It says, God said, let man be made in the image and likeness of God, and let him have dominion over all the earth. And then it says, so God let man be made in his image and after his likeness, and gave him dominion over everything, including the fowl of the air, the fish, everything above and everything under the earth, gave dominion to man. That's what we have to understand if we are going to be dealing with ability, appearance, or functionality. Any one or all of them. Any combination. And it doesn't matter what the label is. That one person I told you about had a label where she was, her future was already determined. She was going to be limited in one direction and the other, and everybody would know that she had a problem because she would have a special bone structure in her head. They defeated every single trait that was attributed to that problem. Every single one. It took a lot of work, a lot of discipline. They had to remind themselves of what their model was about their own daughter. They treated her like they would treat any other person. And that was a very big part of the success. They did not treat her like she was special, like she had special problems or whatever. And she didn't. That was only a false view. Another thing, the wife had a problem when she was born. She was stayed in the hospital extra amount of time. So it was a very difficult time for the mother. And this was another practitioner because they lived in a different area. And the practitioner told him, You keep a record of everything the doctor tells you. And the husband said, well, why? Isn't that just going to embed in our thought all the problems? He says, no. He said, you do that and call me in a couple of days. And I want you to tell me what you discovered from what you were writing down about what they told you. He didn't say why. He just said, do it. And when they had the conversation a couple of days later, the husband said, you know, they told us one thing one day, and the next day they told us something totally different. They were all over the place. He said, that's what I wanted you to learn. I wanted you to learn that that medicine is not a science at all. It is a matter of personal interpretation, and that changes like the wind. Like the wind. So they learned that. And that helped them in overcoming all the problems that she was labeled with. We cannot let a belief of mortal mind put a limitation on immortal mind. There is nothing that has power that can limit truth. It can't happen. If we are disciplined with our own thought, and it doesn't matter what it is that is the problem. It doesn't matter what it is. I think it's Jesus that said, if you have faith that you can move a mountain, that you can actually move it. I don't know, maybe it was someone else. Been a long time since I remember reading that one, but that's the idea. Jesus did not have much in the way of healings in Galilee because nobody had faith that he could do it. They didn't think of him as anything special. They thought of him as a carpenter because that's where he learned the trade of carpentry up until he was 30 years old. They thought of him as anyone else. How in the world could he ever heal a problem? They gave him no benefit of the doubt. So he left and he went to another area. I remember, I think it was the blind man, he asked him, do you have faith you can be healed? In fact, I think there are two or three cases where it was made a point as a part of the story of the healing. Do you have faith that you can be healed? You have to have an open thought. Remember what Genesis 26 says, and God said, let us make man in his image and likeness. Let us give him power over everything, dominion over the earth and everything in it. Let us do it. So we had to open our thought before we could experience what God was doing for all mankind. And if we didn't open our thought to those possibilities, we would be cheating ourselves. That's why Mr. Rawson begins his treatment with the words, everything is possible to God. There is no limit to what God can do. He makes a very firm statement at the beginning of his treatment. After he discovered that he could overcome the belief of time and go back in time for a healing, didn't matter how long ago the problem came up, it could have been, 30, 40, 50, no limit. Whatever number of years it was, it was. But he was able to make the healing effective as of when they first discovered there was a problem. And then everything in their life that had to do with that problem disappeared from their consciousness and the consciousness of anyone that was open to change. And the ones that weren't, well, they just kept carrying that around with them like a big trailer full of garbage that they were pulling to take it to the dump. So it's up to us to have our consciousness open to the truth. If we don't have it open to the truth, then we are limiting ourselves totally. Totally. Is that what we want? Is that the kind of life we want? A life of limitation? Or do we want a life of infinitude? Infinitude. Infinity. Infinite progression. Is that what we want? Infinite progression is concrete being, Mary Baker Eddy says. I think that's in Miscellaneous Writings. Infinite progression is concrete being. Concrete is a symbol for something that's really strong and stable and solid, permanent in nature. And what is permanent in nature? Progress. We have to be always progressing. I read Mary Baker Eddy's other unpublished writings, in fact, several times, very inspirational. And one of the things that's related in there is a church sent her a letter and they said, "We are so grateful. Everything is going so smoothly in our church." She wrote a letter back, and what do you think she said? She said, "That's too bad. That's too bad. Because if you're not having challenges, you will not grow. You will become lazy. You will become stagnant. You will take things for granted." The worst thing in the world that can happen to somebody that's experiencing success is to get lazy and not keep on their toes. I've experienced it. When we think everything is going smoothly, that's when we've got to really make sure that we are doing our protective work to protect our thought from being lazy, to protect our thought from not having the discipline that we should do when we're having a problem. We should decide what kind of a model we want in thought, and this can change every day. And we should hold to that model. Whenever any thought comes to us that is not proper, immediately go to the model and say, "This is what God is. This is what man is. And this is what I am." And therefore, what is presenting itself as a suggestion of something less than perfect, I reject right now. Because it doesn't line up with what God is. It doesn't line up with what man is. Which means it doesn't line up with what I am. I'm going to run my race and not pay attention to mortal mind suggestions. I'm striving for perfection all the time, and I'm going to stick with it. Forever. Forever. That's the attitude we need to have. We have a short video, 1 or 2 minutes long, and it's about never giving up, never quitting. And it's in the voice of Sylvester Stallone, who's known for his movies on fighting and being beaten down and not giving up. And he said, "The worst enemy you ever have is life." He said, "It'll beat you down to your knees and it'll hold you there if you let it." He said, "You must always get up and move forward. Always. Don't get lazy a single time when you get beaten down to your knees with life." He said, "Because it'll happen. It'll happen. It'll happen many times. Every time you think you're really great and really successful, boy, that's when you got to watch out. It'll beat you down to your knees. You'll wonder, well, what did I do wrong? Don't even think about it. Get up. Get up and move forward. We have to realize that the world is rotating, always moving. The sun is going to come up tomorrow if it didn't come up today, or the next day, or the next day. We shouldn't be focusing on that we've got a rainy day today, or storms, or lightning, or thunder, or whatever the problem appears to be. As a matter of fact, Mary Baker Eddy had a few people living in her home that were top Christian Scientists to help move the Christian Science movement forward. And she says, don't send anyone to me for me to interview that doesn't know how to handle electricity and doesn't know how to handle the weather. Those are the higher levels of understanding about Christian Science that are required in order to be able to handle those two things. But they're not any different than these testimonies that I've given in this treatment. It has to do with ability, appearance, and functionality. That's it. It's the same with everything. It doesn't matter what the label is. You could be in car racing, motorcycle racing, piloting a jet plane, riding a bicycle, swimming, being a homemaker, being an architect, being a contractor, building a 100-story building, being a chef. Doesn't matter. Being in the military. Doesn't matter what you do. It's how you do it. It's how you think about what you're doing and whether or not you are in something that is spiritual in nature. And I should have been careful about putting in the military. Because the military has been corrupt since the beginning of having a military. Very rarely is a military involved in something that has to do with spirituality. Very rarely. It is right now, by the way. Right now it is. Because they are assisting in draining the swamp. So they are very much involved in something spiritual. They're not fighting a war with another country. They're not shooting at people in another country to kill people they don't even know who they are, and that the whole motive of the war is corrupt. No, the military today that I'm talking about are the ones that are working inside the boundaries of the U.S., and are cleaning up the swamp, arresting people that have broken the laws of humanity. And in fact, they've broken them again and again and again. And they don't think they will ever have to pay a price. They've gone along this long without it, so they expect to get by with it forever. But things have changed. That's another story, another topic. And we've covered that topic many times in our prayer treatments. It seems like the basics have been covered. So I will bring this treatment to a close. And by the way, when I say extemporaneous, that's exactly what I mean. When a thought comes to me, you hear it very quickly after I hear it. Because if you're going to do a prayer treatment, you better leave your thought open, like it says in Genesis chapter 1, verse 26. Let us. L-E-T is a very big word. Let us. Now, in our giving, we must understand that that means we give credit to anyone that contributed to our understanding. And at the top of the list needs to be the key Bible figures in the Bible. And of course, in the New Testament is Christ Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy. Other experts that have written very, very fine advanced publications, such as Joel Goldsmith is one, Wentworth Winslow, and Frederick L. Rawson, they all had 15-minute appointments. And when the 15 minutes was over, the individual was healed. That was the end of the problem. However, I will tell you that if you're one of those that have been healed by someone else, and if you don't take up the serious study of Christian Science, you accomplish nothing. You accomplish nothing in the long term. If you have a healing, that should only be an incentive for you to dig in and really get to work. And if you've never been a Christian Scientist, then you begin. We tell you how to do it, everything. We have the whole thing under the category of heal everything. But you have to do it. No one can do it for you. No one at all can do it for you. You might be married to a spouse that is a Christian Science practitioner. If you rely on them to do it for you, someday you're going to wake up and realize that was a very big mistake. No one can work out your salvation except you. It's true of everyone that exists. You have to be involved. You have to have the incentive, the desire, the burning desire to want to advance your spiritual nature, bring it to the surface, and share it with the world in the way you think, speak, and act. Mary Baker Eddy gave 7 special prayer treatments called the Diapason of Heaven to her final class in her metaphysical college of 1898. And each one was for a particular term that defines God, the 7 terms. I will select one and recite it to you now, and that will be the close of this treatment. And then after that, the only thing I will do is indicate the time and the date, so that'll be a record with this treatment. So when you listen to it and you get to the end, you'll realize what it is. Although it's intentional to put it in the title as well. Okay, I will read or recite the prayer treatment entitled Diapason of Heaven. The title to this prayer treatment is Ability, Appearance, and Function, and those have a lot to do with the term for God, which is mind. There are other ones that are also directly connected, but because of mind seemed to having a direct influence on ability and functionality, because it does say in the Science and Health that all faculty is a function of mind and ability as well. So therefore, I will recite to you the Diapason of Heaven for Mind by Mary Baker Eddy. We can declare often, divine mind is my mind, and my mind is God. God is my mind, and my mind is good. I have an intelligent mind, a good mind, a wise, perceptive, discerning mind, a clear mind, a joyous, happy mind. Mind is God, all acting, all wise, all loving, all knowing, all seeing. Divine mind is enthroned in my consciousness. Mortal mind and matter and personal sense are not enthroned. Ignorance and apathy and materiality are not enthroned in my consciousness. God is my mind, and my mind is good. Mind is my God, and my mind is good. Divine mind is enthroned. This is the Word of God. Amen. It is 25:08:13 at 13:23, which is Friday at 1:23 p.m. 2025. The title to this prayer treatment that has just been concluded is Ability, Appearance, and Function by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, website mbeinstitute.org. If you have any questions, click on the contact button at the bottom of every page and also in the bottom area of the menu, which is in the top left corner of every page. Thank you for listening. The end.